Small Town Podcast is made possible by generous support from the Georgia Municipal Association. GMA supports Georgia cities.
I hereby call this episode to order.
Hey, small towners, it's Mayor Matt Seal, and thanks for joining me for another episode of Small Town Podcast. Well, we continue our latest trip through Louisiana with a visit to the northern part of that state. Today, we visit a small town that is right along a levee of the Mississippi River, and we talk to a mayor who was not familiar with this town at all when he was growing up, and he certainly did not fall in love with it at first sight, but he has made it his home and now strives to make it a better place for his young family and for new families as the town starts to grow. We're going to go talk with Mayor Matt Alexander in the small town of St. Joseph, Louisiana. Come go with me. Growing up in coastal Georgia, I only thought I lived in a small town. As soon as I graduated high school, I moved to the big city of Atlanta for college and to start my life. My life is a journey, and I ended up in Ocilla, Georgia. Population 3,400. We've got two traffic lights here. We're not looking to get a third anytime soon. Some years later, the people of Ocilla made me their mayor. Man, I love living in a small town. Other folks do too. This is the Small Town Podcast, and I'm your host, Mayor Matt Seal of the great city of Ocilla, Georgia. We are in, we're in Louisiana, first of all, this is the most casually I've ever been dressed for an interview. Not that you're supposed to dress up, I never wear a suit and tie or anything, but it's a travel day. I'll actually get to that in a minute, but I'm in the small town of St. Joseph, Louisiana. I'm in the mayor's office, which means I better be in here with the mayor since it's his office, Mayor Matt Alexander. So Mayor Matt Alexander, thanks so much for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Mayor, welcome to St. Joseph.
Thank you. We already got a chance to look around. You're like right in the downtown. I guess most town halls are. Thank you again for it's guys. It's a Sunday, and I think this is the only time I've ever set up an interview to come visit a town and interview the mayor or other city official on a Sunday. But when I come to Louisiana, sometimes I have to squeeze in the trips, and he wasn't available the end of the journey. I'm here. So mayor, thanks for letting me come to your office. And he, you know, town hall wasn't open. You had to unlock it and
we're very flexible. It's no problem. Glad to be here. Glad you're here.
Yeah, well, we've actually been talking about this for about a year now. Just my previous trips hadn't been able to coordinate the visits, so I'm glad we were able to do this, and so I can learn about St. Joseph. So pretty excited to. There's already we already talked about some of the things going on and some of the things. I guess the momentum's starting to pick up. But before we get to St. Joseph, let's talk about the man that's running the town, or at least his name's on the wall.
Oh yeah. Well, no, I think most people. Either kind of admirably or begrudgingly would admit when people show up to your house, you're more than likely the mayor.
Yeah. That's right. That's what they're coming for. Not just say, hey, how you doing? Well, let's talk about life before you were the mayor, and I'll start with the same question I've started off all my interviews on this podcast and ask you, were you born in St. Joseph, Louisiana?
I was not. No, I have lived here for about, well, just over 6 years. But I was born and raised in Ruston, Louisiana.
Okay.
That's north central Louisiana.
Not too far there, along the I-20 corridor. How far are we from Ruston right now?
2 hours.
Okay. And I do this sometimes, but since we've already kind of pointed out, there's a levee that I can see from just outside Town Hall and on the main street. And you said, yep, over there is the Mississippi River.
That's right.
So you're right on it. I wouldn't call it the banks, I guess, since it's a levee.
Yeah, it's when the river hits a certain stage, it all connects to those bar pits. That's probably everyone around here refers to them as bar pits. It's just a shortening of that.
Yep.
But it's pretty. When I moved here, the river was pretty high, and it's very impressive when the river is about 45 feet, and you're like, oh, that's
and it's right near the top of that.
That's a lot of water. Yeah, and I live Well, it's definitely less than a football field away from it. You can see the levee, really. It's a little bit longer than we are here.
Yeah.
But not much. So we're talking 60.
And when it's that high, it appears to be the mighty Mississippi at that point.
It is very mighty at that point. You can hear the boats and the barges really clearly.
Yeah.
It just is kind of bouncing off.
Well, let's talk about you and Ruston. So that's where you born and raised, and so not too far from it. Did you ever come to St. Joseph from when you were growing up in Ruston?
I never came to St. Joseph before. So I was living in New Orleans when I first found out really anything about Tensaw Parish or St. Joseph. Well, I take that back. The first mention of Tensaw Parish was my dad's father. He went on a hunting trip here, and because in North Louisiana at that time, they had cut down a lot of trees to farm, right? So, and they had, this is, you know, I guess this is, I know this, I'm not going to be able to source it or cite it, but.
You are the source, it's okay. It's
in North Louisiana, people historically shot too many deer. So all the deer were kind of, you know, they almost went way too far in it. But, you know, the soil up there isn't good like the soil here generally. So, you know, it's just a little bit, I guess, a different existence, maybe harder in some ways. So the idea was that, you know, you're hunting, it's not for sport, it's for meat, it's for food. And I guess times were tough, and that just became part of the culture. So areas like this still had these places like, you know, now the Tensaw National Wildlife Refuge, you still have these big expanses of bottomlands that had all this habitat and deer. And people would come over here and hunt, and that was the very first mention of it. But as far as being here...
Not until adulthood, huh?
Not until I actually came to the USDA office because I had started making cold calls in New Orleans to soil conservation districts because I was laid up in this little shotgun house that me and my girlfriend were living in. And I was like, well, if I'm going to, I'd busted up my meniscus and torn it again just doing this landscaping work, which is ironically how I did it the first time. Not any.
Did you get into that? Because we skipped ahead. So you born and raised and graduated high school over in Ruston?
I did, and I went to Louisiana Tech, too, so
okay.
I even stuck around until I was about 23.
Okay, I was
going to
ask for after that, because you've already referenced being in New Orleans, but let's follow the... How did we get there?
So, well, which one do you want me to...
After where'd you get a degree in college? You went to Louisiana Tech?
I graduated in the same degree program that I started in, and that was general studies. And I started in general studies because I was playing basketball my first year of college. So I played 1 year of college basketball for Louisiana Tech, and the classes, they said, well, if you don't really know what you want to do, just do general studies, and they scheduled it so I could be at practice.
And then you'll figure out what you want to do along the way.
So after a year, I decided, well, I want to just be a college student. I'm kind of burned out of playing basketball. And I switched my majors several times. I went and worked on a pipeline for 3 months in Mississippi and made money and then blew all that money. So, and then I went back to school, and eventually I just was like, well, I need to graduate. So the advisor said, well, you could go back to general studies and probably graduate in a year. I said, well, I think that's probably best. So
it was just about the degree at that point.
Well, it was getting time to move on to the next phase of life. I had, you know, 5.5 years of college. You're like, okay, I think the important thing is to finish this so something else can begin.
Okay.
So
got a degree in general studies. Hey, you know what? Not many people finish what they started in. You can say you did that.
Well, I mean,
except
I also
a couple transitions along the way.
Also did did agriculture, sociology. I think business. It was a whole.
So
whole
it sounds
plethora.
Like a well-rounded education. General studies might be the best phrase for it.
I won't argue that.
Well, how'd you end up in New Orleans? What happened after college? You get a degree in general studies.
Well, I got a degree in general studies. I think my first job out of college was I was cleaning carpets for a carpet cleaning company, which was unsavory work, generally speaking. Some people can do terrible things to carpets. I did that. I think I worked at a cleaners, like a laundry
dry
cleaners,
cleaning,
and
kind of
I was delivering shirts and things like that, or delivering clothes to places like the Arcadia Sheriff's Department in Bienville. You know, so I'm making deliveries to town halls and businesses and things like that. Eventually, I was like, I remember working there, and I thought, oh, I can't. This is not how this is supposed to be working out. So I had a friend that had moved to Wyoming, and he said, "We'll move up to Wyoming. You know, I can get you a job where I'm working." So I went up there, and that was. A lot of people make a big deal about the north-south divide in the country. You know, like, oh, or no one from New York State could get along with someone from Tennessee, right? Actually, what I think is culturally speaking, is a lot bigger difference is the folks out west and the people kind of back east. You can get this idea that their ancestors were people who really didn't want people to talk to them much. It's just a different way of engaging. Like, for example, when we had people that would come to one of the bars I would hang out in Ruston, would say, "Oh man, you're from Minnesota." And maybe I'm just friendly and kind of, you know, outgoing, probably more so than some people. I'm not saying everybody from Louisiana is just like going to high five you once you cross the state line, but we'd be like, "Hey, where are you from, man?" "Oh, that's cool. Well, you want to, you know, let's play a game of pool for a beer or something." It was like, you know, we're interested because we're all trying to get out of Ruston, or all trying to get out of Louisiana for a little while at least. So it was like, for me, it was like, well, let me learn a little bit about this may be something where I want to travel. And I was really curious. So.
Yeah, sure. Just trying to get to know new things.
Yeah. When I went to Wyoming, I remember I went to a bar there, and obviously I don't talk like I'm from Wyoming, but we'll get into the accent. My accent was too country for New Orleans, but not country enough for here, but anyway, I'm at this, at this place outside of Jackson Hole where my friend was living, and this guy's like, "Well," she's like, "Why are you here?" I'm like, "Well, I'm here to work." He's like, "Oh." it was very different. I was glad I did that. I mean, I drove from Ruston to Wyoming. I saw a lot of really cool things. I learned a lot. That was one of my first real taking big slices of me still being naive, kind of.
Yeah,
off.
Life lessons,
yeah,
there.
Yeah, exactly.
How long did you stay out there?
I just stayed out there for a summer.
Okay.
I remember when I was driving back, I was driving back and I was still in Wyoming, and the temperature dropped really rapidly, and the road had ice, and I wasn't aware of it because we don't have black ice or really ice very much on the road in Louisiana ever. So I'm thinking, "Oh, I'm so glad I'm getting out of Wyoming. This state sucks." and I hit this patch of ice and just went off in the median. And I was like, "Oh my goodness, I'm going right toward the other side of the interstate." And I corrected and kind of skidded. And I ended up, oh man, just a few feet from the front of my truck, was just a few feet from an 18-wheeler as it was going by.
Wow.
I thought, I think I'll drive really slowly from now on. And after that, I was the slowest driver on the interstate.
But you made it back home.
I did. I remember when I got back into Little Rock, I thought, this smells
familiar.
So it was a lot of folks I met out there from the South, they all kind of said the same thing. It was all kind of like, you know, this place is really... it's really beautiful. It's really majestic. I mean, the Grand Teton Mountains are gorgeous. I mean, the natural beauty of it's really undeniable. I mean, it's just hard to describe. It's just the, I don't know. It just was a different flavor, or not to be degrading or harsh, but maybe a lack of flavor.
So where'd you end up selling back in Louisiana as you came back home? Is that when you moved to New Orleans?
I went back to Ruston.
What, Ruston?
I worked at a place called Divine Wines and Spirits Plus, and I convinced people to buy wine and peach flavored vodka and made them daiquiris and managed the place for a little while, and then I was fired eventually, and then I moved to New Orleans because I had kind of linked back up with a girl I knew in college, and we started dating, and we're married now. So we've been together for 11 years. This summer.
Does that happen to be the woman that was the girlfriend in the shotgun house?
It was, yes.
All right, so
yes,
now we're back to that.
Yeah.
You jumped ahead, we got behind.
So when I moved to New Orleans, once again, it's a big, New Orleans is a big cultural change from Ruston, just like Wyoming was a big cultural change from Louisiana. And I was just kind of finding whatever job I could. I think I remember I cut a banana tree up for these folks as a for an $80 Craigslist gig. So it was just kind of,
whatever,
make a little money, play a little basketball. There was a court right next to the house that was cool. Let me try to get the order of this right. So my girlfriend saw this ad to work on a steamboat. So I got the job on the steamboat, the Natchez steamboat that kind of does these little short cruises on the Mississippi. So I even went as far as got my TWIC card and I can't remember if I got my merchant mariner's credential, but I was like, okay, well, I'll work on a boat. I like this. I didn't really like the fact that it was, well, a lot of the boat work was kind of janitorial. You're cleaning up after people, which is fine after a while. A lot of it's painting. But I actually enjoyed the boat part of it, the tying the lines, the releasing the lines. I liked, when I had more hair, I liked the wind that would kind of blow through your hair and all that. And I actually liked the really foggy nights when everyone would kind of be, oh. I actually liked it.
And a little spooky.
Yeah, it had a little aura to it. So I always went towards that sort of environment. I always liked the, it's a little creepy. But I did that for a while. I quit doing that, and I was gonna work on a boat, so I started calling places like Terrell River Service, and I had all my stuff together. And for whatever reason, you have to take a pre-employment MRI, and they said I had bulging disc in my back. I was a high risk hire, which was kind of a bummer for me at that point because
yeah, you'd already gone through the process of doing
They said we'll fast track you and you'll be a pilot making $150,000 a year. I thought, well, that's pretty good for a 27-year-old kid, which I still thought of myself as a 27-year-old kid. I'm a fully grown man now, but this place has helped. I thought that I had grown up a lot in New Orleans, but as I'll describe some of my adventures here, this was, the hardships, a lot of people would have wanted to avoid what I've gone through here, but I will say it's probably going to be really good in the long run.
Well, how did you get, let's go from now, we're in New Orleans, we're trying to get into boat work.
Yeah.
Didn't happen. How did you get up to St. Joseph?
Well,
that's not just we're not in the metro New Orleans area.
Right. So, so I was working a restaurant job and I was working a landscaping job during the day. And I was in this position, I guess, over and over where we're bending down, doing some yard work in these folks' flower beds, and my knee pops. And I know that sound and that feeling, because I'd already had two meniscus surgeries by this point. So I know what's happened. So I told the restaurant, I said, I'm not going to be able to work for 3 or 4 days. I'm laid up. And I said, well, I was really getting into I was kind of leaning back more towards doing something involved with the environment. For one of our anniversaries, my girlfriend had got us tickets to take this ferry ride to Ship Island in Mississippi. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing. I mean, you had crabs and jellyfish and stingrays and sharks. I thought, oh, this is really cool. And you think about all that goes into the Mississippi River, all goes out into that sound there, right? And I remember the water was really chartreuse, and I thought, well, why is this? Well, the water was the color of the kind of leftover residue from the algae blooms, which is that hypoxia, that dead zone. So I thought, well, all right, if I'm going to bust my body up, it's at least going to be something other than someone to say, you know, your yard looked good during our social. You know, I thought, well, let's try to find a higher purpose in some of this backbreaking labor. So I just started calling soil conservation districts, Washington Parish and all these other places. And one of them happened to be Tensaw Parish. And it was the person whose visitation, the visitation I went to today while I'm dressed like this on a Sunday, it was actually the woman I spoke to the visitation today was actually her mother. So she talked to me for probably an hour and just made this place seem like this weird little lost world. And one thing from there, eventually they carved out this $10 an hour technician job between East Carroll, Madison, and Tensaw Parish, with St. Joseph being the home office. I really didn't think it was going to work out, so I was kind of, you know, just working in restaurants, kind of living it up. And I think it was maybe a couple of days after Mardi Gras of 2017, they said, well, we figured out a way to get you hired. Do you still want to come up here? I thought, yeah, I'm probably, I was like, okay, yeah, I took it. I remember I called a friend. He's like, you need to do this. I was like, yeah, I need to do this, because I was having a really good time at that time, but it wasn't something that was going to be sustainable in the future. And I didn't want to become one of these folks who work in restaurants and all they do is talk about working in a restaurant, or how awful this customer was, or how service was poor, or how service was great. When we would go to get a drink after getting off work, you would hear people and they would just be talking about work the whole time. It's like, you're off work. It's time to talk about something else. Talk about, you know, anything, you know,
anything other than work.
Anything other than that, you know. And I had a good friend at the time for that we worked together. So we talked about work when we got off, but we also had a lot of fun. He is a really smart guy, a lot of fun to be around. So I was lucky to have that, but that's how I ended up here. I'd come up here the previous November, so a few months earlier, just to see what it was like in case it did work out. And it was, you know, it's a little dead-end town. I mean, it's off 65, and you take a left or a right, depending on which way you come. And it's, or I guess there's one other way. You take a left on off of 65 and come out by Lake Bruin. But it's really kind of tucked away. So I thought, oh, this is a strange place. And I didn't know at the time that the water here was awful. And the water, my desk, for those of you that can't see, my desk is, you know, the color of wood. So the water was that mixed in with rust color. That was one of the things that Miss Rush, the lady that I talked to on the phone, that was one thing she did fail to mention. She probably failed to mention it because she knew I wouldn't move here. So to her, you know, no hard feelings, but if you'd have told me that the water was, you know, the color of dirt and rust mixed in a pot together, I'd probably say, I'm probably going to try something else. So, you know, no hard feelings.
But it was too late by the time you found out. So here you are.
It was too late. I was living in a garage apartment by then. So, and then my girlfriend at the time, my wife now, eventually a few months later, she came and joined me, and we've been just trying to keep ourselves alive since then, I guess.
Now, what year was that? How long has that been?
That was 2017.
Okay.
So
you said, yeah, you said you'd been here about 6 years.
Mm,
okay.
So March of 2017, and the garage apartment we were living in, I didn't look at it before because it was, well, from what I was told, the only place it was available. And in all honesty, at that time, it probably was. Had a bath, but no shower. The heat would eventually go out at really good timing during one of the coldest winters up until that point. I remember if you would get out of the bathtub when the floor was wet or you were wet and you would touch the light switch, it would give you a little tingle through the first couple of digits.
I gotta ask. Because the picture you're painting is not one where you came to the town and fell in love with it. And I'm sitting in the mayor's office, and your name is on the desk. So
yeah.
What was it that kept you from running for the hills? Because it sounds like you would have not come if you'd known certain things.
Right.
Your first experiences weren't great, so there had to be something to it that they kind of pulled you in and made it something special enough to work for.
That's you're right. So like I said, I came here to... I was a technician for the USDA, and I thought I was going to be outside planting trees and doing riparian buffers and, you know, keeping all the sediment and pesticides and chemicals out of the Mississippi River Basin, and we just, you know, make it happen, clean the Gulf up, right? I was very kind of, and I still am, idealistic. I have no real problem with kind of setting myself up for disappointment, but you have to try. So I realized that job wasn't what I expected, and I think I was a bit hippie-ish for them too, because I would ask questions and I would get kind of odd looks, like I was like, why are you planting cover crops on this field if you're just gonna spray Roundup on it from an airplane? And they'd be like, so I was like, okay, this may not, and the frustrating thing for me was that I'm the same person I told y'all over the phone interview I was. So I guess I was kind of frustrated that, you know, that they were still surprised that, you know, it was like, well, we thought you were just trying to get a job. We didn't know you're actually sincere. But so around that time, this is probably, so you got March, April, May, June, July, August. It's probably October of 2017. I'm thinking, okay, I'm gonna get out of here. I'm gonna go back to school, you know, get a teaching certificate, teach somewhere around Ruston, you know, buy a cheap little house, you know, somewhere. I think I was looking at a house in Homer. It was $30,000. I thought, well, I could own a house, you know, because I did realize that, you know, I did realize that maybe living in a small town wouldn't be so bad because I had, you know, no money, but I wanted to, you know, become what you'd say, an adult. So I thought, well, you know, I remember...
Figured that would be easier to do in a small town.
Yeah, I remember the landlord in New Orleans was... I thought, let me just say, I had gotten kind of tired of the idea of paying someone to live in a house that I would never own.
Yeah.
After some of the...
You wanted to kind of take a little control.
Some of the experiences.
Yeah.
So, the woman that I was renting from, that my wife at the time now... we're renting from, she had a grandson that was playing basketball at the private school here. And she said, well, you should come to a game. So I came to a game and I talked to a few people, and one of them happened to be, is the district attorney's wife. She worked at the school, ended up, really, really nice person. We had a nice conversation, and I said, well, you know, I've played college basketball. I was, you know, I know how it works, and I guess they were having issues with their basketball coach. So I had a practice with him a couple of days later because he was sick, and apparently some of the players this is the boys' varsity team. They said, well, that's the first real practice we've ever had. This is the first practice I've ever had as a coach. I didn't have any coaching experience, but obviously I played basketball and consider myself an above average player. So pretty soon after that, just a few days later, they made me the coach. So here I am. I'm living here now. I'm a coach. And that February, we bought a house in St. Joseph and
made it home.
And that, I guess so, the basketball is being a basketball coach is what
that's how I got pulled you in.
The house too, buying a house and for $22,000 was appealing at the time. Yeah.
And did you get your teaching certificate and also doing teaching or?
I did. I a couple years later, I went back to school and got a MAT, which is a Master's Alternative Teaching Certificate from ULM online. And so for a while, I was in school. I was coaching basketball, and I had a one-year-old child that would not sleep. I mean, she wouldn't sleep. And I was...
So you had some challenges that year.
And at that point, I was not really good at being back in school. So I was still... I would still read some and go, oh, you know, this is... I don't know, I have to do this. You know, I was still in that sort of... You know, still a little whiny in my... Now it's just... Put your head down.
just put your head down
and do it. So that... I mean... That was good because as I went on in that program, I complained a lot less and I became a lot more productive. I was like, okay, you just have to do this. This is not a, I guess, you know, nobody's going to come in here and kind of baby this for you. So,
well, we got the journey from Ruston to St. Joseph via Wyoming and New Orleans.
Yeah,
we got why you stayed, even though your experience from the very beginning was not a fall in love with. And so now you're here. What in the world possessed you to then, after just a few years, to run for mayor of the town? And obviously win.
Well, you know, the possibility of owning your own home and making this place work was really appealing. Obviously, I didn't feel like... I guess I was torn between, okay... I think we could have a good life here, and you know, we have a daughter now, so it's not, you know, our you know, I don't know, a lot of people don't do this, and I'm not saying this to brag on myself because I have lots of shortcomings as a husband and a father and just a human being in general. But when my daughter was born, I was like, you don't matter anymore, dude. It's all about, you know, like, you've got to forge a way for this child. And that was really good for me. So I thought, well, we could probably make this work. This might be a place that could kind of mend itself. So I thought, well, if I want the best for my daughter, then probably what's the best for my daughter will probably be the best for their kids too. So, and I always had, you know, when my daughter was born, the water was much better. It had been corrected. I didn't become mayor until my daughter was about two. So I remember I called the Department of Health because I'd read something about, you know, the dangers of copper and lead and anything in your water. I'm thinking, well, you know, we're bathing our daughter in this water. She's drinking the water because she's, you know, doesn't know how to follow directions right now. So. So I called the Department of Public Safety or Department of Public Health. I can't remember which one. But, you know, the water in town was so bad that I wanted to make sure that the water going through the pipes to our house wasn't leaching anything that had been stored there that was really unsavory or really, really dangerous.
Right, would have been harmful. Yeah.
And I remember the person I talked to said, I would like y'all to come out and do a test of my water. You know, I have a child. I'd like to make sure that, you know, I don't need to change all the pipes in my house. And they said, oh, well, you know, we don't really do that. You know, we don't really go to individual residences. I'm sorry. I thought I called the Department of Public Health. And is this the wrong number? And I said, hold on one second. And they transferred me. And then someone came out the next day. And maybe that was, it's like my Charlie Wilson story where, you know, I can't tell you who to vote for, but this, you know, so-and-so fed my dog glass. So I thought, well, it's nice that worked. And I thought, well, that can probably work for other people. And I guess after, after a few years of living here and living through, you know, having to go and get water from the National Guard water buffalo and carry it back in milk crates with, you know, 8 1-gallon jugs of clean water.
Yeah.
You think, man, I really don't want anyone to have to go through that again. And I guess there's a lot of reasons, but I thought I could probably do this pretty well, because all I've done since I've lived here is looked at problems that I feel like are easily solvable.
Yeah.
And I also knew, in fact, one of the aldermen, one of the council members, he was going to run.
I was just going to ask you that next. So what year did you decide to run?
So this is 2020.
Okay.
So summer 2020, he comes over and says, you know, his father's ill. His father was going through Alzheimer's or dementia, and it was a lot on him. And he said, I think you should run for mayor.
Oh, this is the mayor that came to you.
Oh, he was the alderman at the time.
Oh, okay, alderman that came. Okay.
So he said, I think you should run for mayor. So I thought you were going to. I said, well, I've got this going on and this going on. I thought, okay, well, let me think about it. I knew who else was going to run, and I didn't think that they were of the right temperament to do it. And I said, okay. I thought about it. My wife didn't want me to do it. Probably for the first year of being mayor, when I would bring this sort of trouble from work home with me. So I told you didn't have to do this. You know, this is all self-inflicted. and she's right. It was. And I've gotten a lot better about, well, her opinion might be different than mine, but I've tried to improve on the separation of that. And I think I've figured out now what's really worth worrying about and what's just what can wait a day. But when I decided I was going to run, I went and knocked on everybody's door that I could for about 3 months. And I had, and I guess the competitive programming from being in organized sports, I thought, well, if you lose, you have to move. because it's, you know, it's a 1,000-person town, and plus I thought, well, if I lose, also the other two candidates, I thought, well, you know, you may be in social pariah territory if you lose as well.
So was it you and two others, three total?
Myself and two residents that were born here and grew up here.
Sure.
were older,
had the connections for a lot longer than you. Certainly an advantage in a small town, especially.
Well, and maybe to my advantage, a lot of people didn't know me. I didn't have maybe some of the baggage either.
That's true.
So yeah. I think that can kind of go hand in hand. And I obviously had had ideas. I told people what I'd like to do, and I asked them what they wanted to be done.
Well, we know the outcome. Did it require a runoff, or did you win in the first?
62% of the vote.
Okay.
So did not require.
And the previous mayor didn't run.
The previous mayor was one-term mayor. He's an older gentleman, and he actually ran against a long-time mayor who was going up for his, I think it would have been maybe his fifth term.
And so the previous mayor having one term and then he decided not to run again.
Yeah, the previous mayor, there was the town was under a lot of accounting scrutiny.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a fiscal administrator that had been appointed, set up best practices.
Okay.
So
whoever was coming in was going to have some issues to deal with.
Yeah, and believe it or not, the fiscal administrator did a really good job of organizing as much as he could, and I know it was a tremendous task, but, you know, you can't get to everything. We had an ARPA payment that when the ARPA first came on, said, well, we should have gotten it by now. I remember calling some folks from Lamats and saying, okay, we didn't get our payment yet, and I feel like something isn't right. So I called, I made all these phone calls to Baton Rouge, and I would call them and say, how do you feel about people cursing on the phone? And they go, well,
we don't prefer
do you personally curse? I was like, do you mind if I curse? I would just go, you know, how
is this $150,000 going to be sent to a dead man's electronic funds? It's just, so I said, please send me a paper check.
Wow.
So there's a lot of things that people don't really, your armchair quarterbacks or your tailgate mayors, you know, after four or five beers, everyone has a great idea of how to be a mayor on the back of a tailgate.
But yeah.
There's lots of it that people will really never know about because not everything.
Well, they're not dealing with it.
Well, not everything you do is tangible or is like can be viewed by, you know.
Right.
Not everything is a park that's being built. Some of it is just
you can only know if you are in it.
Some of it's just you making 20 phone calls that you really shouldn't have to make, and just going, oh my goodness, I can't afford to mess this up. This is $150,000 that could change the course of the town, and we've gotten both of those and spent them really wisely but aggressively too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Little stuff like that was just, it really can take a toll on you. I probably could just crawl into some sort of, you know, science exhibit where they, you know, talk about caves and just hide out there for a while.
Well, I want to find out what you did, what you're doing, what's going on, but I do want to switch. We have a segment I've done for years now, called the Get to Know You question. So I got four questions to help me and the audience get to know you. And the first question is, do you now have or have you ever had a nickname?
The only nickname I've ever really had, and it was short-lived, but when I was a freshman in high school, I played varsity basketball, and my nickname for a while was Rookie.
Okay.
For a while.
Hey, that, just for the first year.
And then it kind of transitioned into Alexander, which is, you know, my last name, but that was
so you're playing varsity ball your freshman year. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd say you're above average.
I still am. I hear some of the students that I teach, and you know, kids today certainly don't lack self-esteem in a lot of ways. Oh. I'm great. I'm the GOAT. I'm the best. I'm NBA bound. I don't know how well you can dribble with two hands. I try to be a bit merciful to them too, but I'm very quick to I'm very quick to let them know that I'm still better at basketball than them, even twice their age, and they hate it, but it still happens. So I have a few more years, and then after that, I'll probably. My body will really fully betray me.
Yeah,
it's trying really hard, but I'm not fully ready to submit.
All right, second question: what would be your go-to karaoke song?
Go-to karaoke song?
Yeah, come on.
It depends. It depends on what sort of mood I would like to create. Go-to karaoke song. That's a great question.
Thank you.
I like
this is the one that usually stumps everybody.
Well, I like
I got another music question later that might help you with this one if you want to.
Maybe David Allan Coe's "You Never Even Call Me by My Name." I think it's a great country western song. I wrote my good friend Steve Goodman back. I said he in fact had written the perfect country western song. So
all right, that does it.
Yeah.
Third question: what is your favorite meal or favorite dish?
Favorite meal or favorite dish is probably fried chicken thighs with mashed potatoes and green beans.
Thighs specifically. I've gotten a lot of fried chicken, but that's the first time the thighs specifically.
I cut them up in the little pieces and double dredge them. I can cook very unhealthy food very well. But I like mashed potatoes and gravy a lot. White pepper gravy specifically.
Oh man, yeah, very specific.
So yeah, I could probably do that. I could probably substitute catfish. I like catfish too. So kind of those.
We're going on.
Those two.
That's a big plate.
Yeah.
All right. Final question. If you could attend the concert of any singer, duo, band, any performer of any kind, whether they are now dead or alive, whose concert would you want to attend?
Dead or alive. You know, it might be fun to go to a Rage Against the Machine concert.
Rage Against the Machine.
I think my cousin and I were really into that when we were teenagers, and I think it might be fun to just thrash around and just like get carried from one end. I think that would be fun. Yeah.
Rage Against the Machine. All right. Well, thanks for letting us get to know you.
Absolutely.
This Louisiana episode of Small Town Podcast is produced in partnership with the Louisiana Municipal Association and is sponsored by Louisiana Economic Development. LMA and LED invite you to visit and enjoy the small towns of Louisiana. Small Town Podcast is supported by the Douglas Coffee County Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Authority. If you are seeking a vibrant community with great entertainment, recreational opportunities, a low cost of living, and a strong local economy, then you should check out the City of Douglas and Coffee County, Georgia. Visit coffeegachamber.com to find out why the Douglas Coffee County community is a great place to visit and an even better place to call home. Irwinomics is the producer of Small Town Podcast. We also handle digital production and marketing for small businesses that help small towns survive and thrive. In today's global and very digital world, your digital presence is just as important as your physical presence, if not more so. Irwinomics helps clients with all aspects of digital communications, from website creation and maintenance, social media management, email lists and newsletters, digital content creation, including audio and video production, and making sure that all of these things are working together to build your business beyond the city limits and county lines, so you can focus on keeping your small town community strong and vibrant. For more information and to see how Irwinomics can help guide you in growing your business, go to Irwinomics.com or contact us through Small Town Podcast. That's IRWINOMICS.com. Irwinomics, helping small town business thrive.
All right. Well, now that we've gotten to know you and your, very, like I said, winding road of a story of how you at least started out in Louisiana.
Yeah,
I did have one mayor in Georgia. I asked her where she was born. Havana, Cuba was the answer. So that was an international story. So yeah, it's always fun.
Be curious to ask her about her politics.
But let's talk about St. Joseph. And actually, tell me the population of St. Joseph. Let me ask that. I know it's a fairly small town, even among small towns.
It is 1,000 folks.
Right on the mark.
Right on the mark.
All right.
Living and breathing.
So you're a town. I know my village, town, city. If you got 1,000 or more, it's a village. Until 5,000, then you can be a city, and so that determines everything. And I actually was thinking this as soon as you said it. You said you've done some wise and aggressive things with, I think you said, $150,000 of the ARPA funds, ARPA funds that were coming to the city. So I'm specifically curious about that since you made that comment. But you're in your first term. You got in here. You beat two people that were born and raised here with lots of connections. So what have you done? And what do you hope to do? Because you're still you're in your third year, right?
Well, two and a half years.
Two and a half years. In. Okay. All right. So in your third. So you still got another year plus to go, and then you'll make a decision whether to run again.
Yep.
I'm curious about that. But yeah, what all have you done? What'd you do with the money? What have you done? What have you worked on? And what's been going on in St. Joseph?
A lot of the money has been used to do a lot of. What most people would be considered boring things, like
absolutely those are unfortunately the most important things. Right. They're not flashy.
It's really been infrastructure related.
You did mention the water was not in the best condition when you first came here.
Well, the water improved a lot when the new plant fully went online. It took them a while to get. It took the water contractors, which we have. Our water company, we actually hire a water company to run our water plant. So they still do that. And I still micromanage them a lot to make sure that they do what the contract says for them to do. Mm-hmm. And there's things I check on and order based on what I've seen and what I think. So it is, The water is really good. Actually, we made an A in our water report. So even where I grew up in Ruston made a B. But I always thought Ruston's water is great, and Ruston does have good water from the Sparta Aquifer. But I think there was issues with water pressure. I remember it's some of it's based on your complaint log, how many complaints you have. And when I was living here before I became mayor, I think I was the only person to be from St. Joseph that filed an actual complaint with the Department of Health about the water. So I'm sure that has a lot to do with it. People here generally complain to me and not to make the phone call in Baton Rouge, which I've grown accustomed to. But when some of the water plant, the money was spent, you know, we built a fence around the water plant that the sanitary survey was needed. So some of that was used for that. We've done lift station repairs, which are obviously, you know, connected to your sewer system. The really big project we had was a gas repair project. We had, I think it was about 130 leaks in our gas system.
Wow.
And we've got those down to a very manageable number. In fact, the company that we hired to do that will be coming back on the 5th, and they'll be here the 5th, 6th, and 7th, and 8th of June. And we're trying to round up those last few places. In fact, there's one place that is just right behind Town Hall, and it was from when someone drove off into the ditch during the ice storm February 2021, and it's been leaking for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's I'm really, the folks that I work with, I'm really happy to work with them. They do a good job. There's not that many workers here for as fast as the town is growing, and mostly what's happening is we're realizing that, you know, we're growing at a pace faster than our infrastructure. So we're just, when something, this needs to be repaired, we fix it. So
right.
It's
you're being reactive and you'd like to be proactive.
Yeah. And I think at some point, someone who does this job will be able to be proactive. If I were to drop dead today, I would at least hope that someone could say that their job will be easier than mine has been,
because of the things you've taken care of.
It's been pretty difficult, and we're trying to encourage people just to do simple things like call energy about your street light being out on your own. You know, it's not, you know, the legality of whether the town is supposed to cut the portion of your ditch that's 6 inches from the road and to the road. You've already cut the rest of your yard, just weed eat it. I mean, we're Dwayne, Mr. Owens, the supervisor, Bud, Burnell, and Chase. That's the maintenance crew.
I was just going to ask you, what's the total employee count for your
So
your
we
town?
Have four maintenance crew. So they don't have time to mow everyone's...
And that's all your streets,
you know,
and
we're,
parks.
We're not going to weed eat the whole town every time someone cuts their grass, but you know, their riding lawnmower doesn't go on 45-degree angles, so they leave certain portions of it. A lot of people are doing a lot of things really well, and a lot of things that haven't been done. When I first started out, we would buy rocks with ARPA money, the ARPA money, to just fill in potholes because the streets were terrible. I mean, the street that the garage apartment was on, 2nd Street, I mean, it literally looked like someone had dropped bombs from an airplane and just blown the street up. I've myself and the maintenance crew on separate times we fill those holes up. I remember filling the holes up with a couple of the guys, two of the owners of the Mexican restaurant, and one of their fathers. We're mixing concrete and rocks together, and it holds for a while, but you know, we're the police jury is slated to, what the police jury's done lately at our request and with good success, is they've ground up some of these roads that were just really, there's no point in trying to patch it, and we don't have the money right now, even though the grant's in motion, to do a complete, you know, overhaul all the roads and actually have them sealed and paved and like a road should be. But they go in with a large piece of equipment and they'll just grind them up, churn them up, level them all, smooth them, pack them, and it's a huge improvement. And people, after they see that done, they're like, okay, well, it doesn't really matter if this is a dirt road. The other road looked terrible anyway and had potholes on it. So we're trying to do that because when we do get the grant to fix the roads, you know, that $6 million that we applied for, it won't have to be eaten up by all of this sort of preparatory work.
Right, you've done some of that already. Yeah. We'll go farther.
But the gas project's really good. It was quoted at $110,000. Right now it's at $56,000. So we're going to have a lot of money left over that we had allotted for that to do some other things. One of the things I'm really excited about is one of the first things we realized is that, you know, there were a lot of people that had low opinions of kids. Oh, these kids are bad. These kids don't have anything to do. You have to give them something to do. You know, you can't just expect them to be good and not have any offerings. So we had a big event of May of 2021. Said we're going to get this park back online. This park's going to have new equipment. We're going to have and now we're going to have a splash pad at the park with new equipment. The family that it's going to be, of the gentleman it's going to be honoring, you know, they're willing to chip in and hopefully they can help us put a fence around it. And we're going to put some culverts there and put dirt on top of them so that it's going to be a flat surface walking up to it and not have a ditch that holds water. The old park had this, it's still there, but it's going to be coming up soon. It's a giant blue slide that looks like it goes down at about a 45 degree angle, and it just, you just get shot out into the ditch. So whoever did the environment, you know, the engineering specs on that, was there's probably a better place that could have gone. But we use some of the we've used a lot of the money for equipment that was needed for the maintenance crew. When I became mayor, the maintenance crew had two old mowers and maybe three or four weed eaters that might work or might not work. I mean, one of the things that I focused on mainly was the blight of the town. So no one is going to want to move here. No one is going to want to invest here if the town looks bad. So we were really aggressive about, and I talked about it a lot, and I think just the fact that I talked about it from August, September, October, you know, I said, one of the things we're going to do is we're going to make the town look good. That's the first thing. It's an easy thing to do. It's a small town. You know, if people don't clean up their own properties, we're going to send them letters, and we're going to clean them up for them and charge them to their end of year tax roll. And we've had to do that a few times, and we sent out probably 175 letters, and most people just complied because they knew it was the right thing to do, and they knew they had seen me and the maintenance crew filling in potholes. They'd seen me on Saturday hauling a trailer,
right?
Breaking my truck.
You weren't asking them to work, and you weren't doing anything. You pitched in as well.
Well, it was very much the same philosophy I had, and I was coaching at the same time. It's the same philosophy. You know, I'm gonna ask a lot of these kids, a lot of these players. This is nothing that I didn't do when I was your age, and I would even do some of the stuff with them. You know, I can. I'm not asking them to do anything I wouldn't do, and I think people really like that. I can respect that, you know. We bought a tractor with a bush hog because we realized we needed that. We bought two new mowers, so now we have four. We have weed eaters. We have a backpack blower. I mean, it's just little things that you wouldn't think. Repairs to the amphitheater restrooms. Just kind of things that you walk by and you say, this needs to be better, this needs to be fixed, or this needs to exist where it doesn't. And once they expanded the guidelines on the ARPA funding,
yeah,
we just said, okay, this is all for government purpose, this is all justified. If we need to write a narrative and you know, we will. But we were pretty aggressive with it, and that was, I mean, I really give that and the Mexican restaurant a tremendous amount of credit, because the Mexican restaurant proved that there could be a viable restaurant in town, and it gave people a reason to be excited and come to St. Joseph, and that just multiplied when other restaurants came in.
And I was going to ask, you segue perfectly, because the downtown, like just driving here and parking right in front of Town Hall, it's pretty impressive. The stores you got, the restaurant, you said there's actually two others as well. Mm-hmm. So talk about, and that you've attributed, you just said it, the what's the name of the Mexican restaurant?
Maria's.
Maria's. Mm-hmm. So Maria's is kind of, was a little bit of a catalyst for some activity in downtown. So that's just been a couple years.
Totally.
So what's happening and where's it going?
Well, I mean, the same time I was campaigning, Maria's was being built. They started in November. I started in late December.
So just timed right. You didn't arrange for Maria's to, that wasn't a campaign promise.
No. That was something that was
already
in motion.
Works, yeah.
But it's, I mean, they've been great. There's now the Walking Pig is now open and with the library in between the two restaurants. There's a restaurant and a barbecue and blues restaurant that's open next to the laundromat that's on Newton Street, which Newton and Plank, they run a perpendicular. Just to prove that a restaurant could work here was great. The restaurant, when they first purchased it, was right next to Town Hall, and it was just this small room that would just get jam-packed. So they expanded into all the way to the library's lot, mm-hmm. and made it actually the main restaurant. And it just, I mean, it was like they could probably move into Town Hall and do the same thing and still overflow.
Are you attracting, or they attract the restaurants and the retail, attracting people from throughout the parish and maybe even neighboring parishes as well?
Yeah, we had an event. The Downtown Association business owners put on an event every Memorial Day weekend. So every Friday you have what's known as Party on the Plank, and this is the third year they've had it. And this year was a remarkable success. It was one of the things that I really, really wanted to do, and it's not something that, it's something that you hope that what you're doing will lead to this. But, you know, St. Joseph is a small town. My friends used to say, you know, you're familiar with the term the Deep South. Obviously you're from the Deep South, but I used to tell my friends I'm in the deepest South, because you have, you know, we were, and I guess it's attractive in a way, but you're a little bit behind in a lot of ways than maybe some, you know, obviously your more metropolitan areas, and the pace of life is slower here, so you don't have a lot of the issues that you would have in larger places, at least on the same scale, obviously. But, you know, you have a public school, which I work at, and you have a private school, which I used to work at too, in the same place. And I don't know if it will ever happen, you know, a fully integrated school. You know, I would love to see that happen, because I think people here are really similar regardless of where they go to church or what they look like, or, you know, or what town they live in. There's a lot of competitions in Tensaw Parish between the towns, because they all used to have their own high school and compete against each other. So, but I was really excited. What made me feel really good was that the event Friday was just the mood and the vibe was just really celebratory. It was really peaceful. It was really collaborative, and it was a really, really just everybody was there, and we have a trunk or treat party downtown every Halloween, and that's another event that's like that too. So what I'm really excited about is you have places now in town that appeal to different people's preferences, but you're starting to see that hesitancy for some people to say, oh, well, that's a place for people like that, or that's a place for people like that. That's starting to be less and less, and people are starting to, I guess, be a bit more courageous. And I think that's really, I knew that was going to be the starting point, and yeah. I'm glad to see that, because, you know, the parish is small. People are going to have to, out of necessity, you know, understand that that coming together may be the only way for survival.
Well, sounds
a
like
lot of, a lot of places, a lot of rural places, yeah, I'm sure have that same issue. I mean, I don't know what it was like when you were mayor in Georgia, but I'm assuming it probably has a similar dynamic.
Sure. There's a slower than we want, but move in the right direction towards a more collaborative, more unified community. And it sounds like from what you just said from that event, and hopefully some other things too, that things are going in the right direction.
Yeah. Oh, well, there's also a really, really fantastic tea store on the corner there, and they've been great too. I mean, there's
plug in for the tea store.
I mean, there's boutique shops. There's a wine and pizza bar that's opening. There's an antique store. I mean, it's a very eclectic downtown for a small town.
Driving in, I thought, okay, this is and the types of stores and the types of restaurants was a good mix.
Yeah.
Yeah, wasn't all the same. Well, mayors, we kind of close things out. I want to give you the same opportunity I've given all my guests and give you a chance to speak directly to the Small Town Podcast audience. Tell them why they should come visit, or maybe if they can find a $22,000 house, and tell them why they should come move to St. Joseph, Louisiana.
Well, I think, you know, as you kind of survey what's going on in this, you know, the Delta region of Northeast Louisiana, this is definitely a place where progress is occurring. I mean, I think everybody wants to live in a place that's ascending rather than declining. Obviously, I'm a school teacher as well, so education to me is very important. I mean, and obviously, I've lived here for 6 years, and I feel like I've made a really positive impact. You know, if this is somewhere that you called home, or somewhere that you think you'd like to call home, if you're an active person, if you are the type of person that would consider yourself an active citizen, I think that the sky's the limit here. I think you're, in a way, I was almost kind of, there was like this blank canvas with all the right painting utensils, and we just have put the color where we thought it was the right place to put it on the canvas. And it's amazing to kind of, you know, I don't think about this very often, but it is a really rewarding feeling to know that, you know, you had at least a small hand in it, you know, that this idea you had was a good idea, and this idea maybe, you know, through a lot of hard work and making it into reality, and actually made someone's life better, made their day better. I mean, if that's the sort of person that you see yourself as, or you want to live somewhere where you feel like your opinion counts and your voice matters, you can definitely do that here. I think that's what I like about it is I don't think there's anywhere else I've ever lived where, you know, where I felt like I could actually have an impact and not have to jump through just an enormous amount of hoops or just knock on doors that were never going to get answered. So I think this is a great place to live and try that out. If you have to be up for it, it's not close to anywhere. I mean, but I think that's kind of an appeal too.
Mayor Matt Alexander, thanks so much for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Well, small towners, that'll do it for this episode of Small Town Podcast. I want to thank Mayor Matt Alexander for talking with me. I also want to thank the Louisiana Municipal Association and Louisiana Economic Development for partnering and sponsoring this episode. As always, I want to thank our season sponsors, the Georgia Municipal Association and the Douglas Coffee County Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Authority. Thank you for supporting us as we explore and share great small towns. I'll talk to you soon, and y'all are welcome to come to Osceola
anytime.
Small Town Podcast is an Irwinomics production. We release new episodes every other week featuring small towns through stories of the people who live and lead there. Our podcast episodes are made possible with editing assistance from Resonate Recordings, who also mixes and masters all of our episodes. You can subscribe to Small Town Podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, and the next episode will download while you sleep. You can also leave us a rating and review, which would help us reach new listeners. We would really appreciate it. Beyond our episodes, you can engage with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also learn more about us and the small towns we visit by visiting our website, www.smalltownpodcast.com. We'd love to show all you small towners out there some great images from the small towns we visit and let you know about the festivals and events you can participate in. Thanks again for listening, and we hope to see you real soon, because there's no place like Osceola, Georgia.
We stand adjourned.